Hi, this is Bill Arnold. Missed a show or need me talking to help you sleep tonight? I have several solutions to that situation. Here are the podcasts from the show. You are the best for listening and supporting Faith Radio. And a warm welcome to Afternoons with Bill Arnold. I think at the end of this hour, we should all be better off because we're going to talk to Matt Norman, who is the president and CEO of Norman & Associates. It offers Dale Carnegie programs in the upper Midwest, Minnesota, Iowa, Nebraska, South Dakota, and other places. And we're going to talk about, are you someone people want to work with? Huh? What makes someone magnetic and fun to work with? And can you develop these characteristics in yourself? And then can we take these and apply them to kingdom work? That's coming up in just a couple of minutes. We're going to have Matt on. And then a little bit later in the hour, we're going to have Sheila Heen on. And I always am fascinated when Sheila comes on. She is a lecturer on law at Harvard Law School. I guess that's a hard school to get into, so I'm told. And she talks about how to handle difficult conversations. And if you are going to be having one soon, you're going to want to listen because she is good. So that's what we're going to learn today in this hour. I'm very much looking forward to the hour, and I hope you are too. It's weekend is here, so I hope you've had a good week. And we're just going to take a little break and then come back, and we're going to jump right in with Matt Norman. Be back in a minute.
Have you ever wished you could listen to your favorite radio program when you wanted to? That way, you'd never miss a program you really wanted to hear, simply because your program came on when you had an appointment, you were at work, or something urgent came up. And for those really busy days, you could listen early in the morning or late at night when things were calmer, and you could take the time to reflect and meditate on what you heard. Well, you can listen to your favorite programs whenever you want. Download the Faith Radio app by searching Faith Radio in the Apple Store or Google Play Store to gain instant access to Faith Radio programs and previous shows. It really is that simple. Search and subscribe to your favorite program and listen anytime. Download the Faith Radio app today and don't miss a thing. Once again, go to iTunes or Google Play on your mobile device and search for Faith Radio to download the free Faith Radio app and start listening today.
Welcome to the show. I'm excited to talk to Matt Norman. He is an exceptional, bright, energetic guy. He's got his own company, mattnorman.com. You can go learn about him. He uses a lot of Dale Carnegie training and also does a lot of consulting and does all kinds of stuff. So words that pop into my head are confident, competent, enthusiastic. But I don't want to talk about me anymore. Let's bring Matt on. Hello, Matt.
Hi, Bill. It's great to connect with you.
Yeah,
Thanks for that.
Yeah. Now, when you were presenting recently to a friend's company, and the message was, are you the kind of person people want to work with? Boy, did that get my attention.
Did it? What was it that got your attention?
Just the title. Because yeah. I instantly, of course, you start listening autobiographically and you think, huh, am I the guy? Am I the kind of person people enjoy working with? Or... Well, then I wondered, what are the criteria? How would I evaluate based on that if I would be a person that people would enjoy working with?
Yeah. I think often we tolerate working with others, or perhaps we're cordial working with others, maybe because we have to, because they're our boss, that we depend on them for a role in our organization. Mm-hmm. But if we have the opportunity to stop working for them or with them, we, in many cases, would probably take that opportunity. And so the question is, do people really want to work with you, or do they just have to work with you?
That's a really good question. So there must be some criteria you have for doing some diagnostics on this.
That's right. And those criteria can also be used as ideas to become more of the type of person that people okay. want to work with. They really are, that they gravitate towards. I think about myself, for example, during a period in my life when I was very stressed, probably focused too much on results and not enough on how those results were being accomplished. And as much as people would smile when they'd see me and I think describe me as a competent person and, you know, a nice person, an ethical person, I think deep down, people were not moving towards me. They were generally moving away from me. And so, you know, certainly one part, one diagnostic is looking at the people around you and determining, are they moving away or for me, or towards me? I know of a client in town who, again, great company, great person, great leader, and yet people are leaving that company right now. Not in droves, but slowly they're finding other opportunities. And so that's certainly one data point.
That's real interesting. So are you a person that are drawing others to yourself, or are you the kind of person that people are maybe avoiding in the halls or avoiding altogether?
Yeah. Are people reaching out? Am I getting invited? Are people remaining committed to the cause, to the organization? You know, often we'll see, and this applies not just to companies, but this could apply to, you know, being on an elder board at mm-hmm. church, for example, or a deacon. This could be a volunteer group that we're a part of in the community. And the question is, are people eager to attend your meetings? Are they showing up on time? Are they participating? Do they seem comfortable and excited to be there? Are they finding new ways to get involved? These would all be indicators. Are they vulnerable? Are they willing to open up? And do they, you know, are they transparent with you? These would all be indicators that you're someone that they really want to work with versus someone that they just sort of, tolerate.
Mm-hmm. So, Matt, is this a skill set that all of us can learn, do you think, or is it just what you're born with and it's what you got?
Well, I'm really a believer in a growth mindset, you know, based on the research by Carol Dweck at Stanford University, published in the book Mindset, that indicates that, you know, certainly there are certain talents or gifts or personality styles that are hardwired in us that we're not necessarily going to change. But, you know, Carol Dweck's research in the book Mindset indicates that we can change, you know, this concept of neuroplasticity.
Oh, yeah.
That neuroscientists would say that our brain can change. And I particularly believe, and this also is borne out in the book Quiet, which I think you and I have talked about before, Susan Cain's book Quiet, which would indicate that whether you're an introvert or an extrovert, and in fact, particularly introverts, are able to really connect well with people, perhaps in ways that extroverts aren't. And so whether we're an introvert or extrovert, whether we are 20 years old or 80 years old, whether we are someone that's socially anxious or socially comfortable, or whether we're analytical or tend to have more of a sales and marketing customer service type role, all of us can be someone that others really want to work with.
Mm-hmm. So as we examine this, am I someone people want to work with? One of the first indicators, Matt, is do they stay clear of me or are they drawn in by me? What would be another indicator that we would look for?
So I think the degree to which people are opening up around us, you know, are they disclosing? Are they transparent? Are they vulnerable around us? Or are they guarded? And do they tend to hold back?
And that would be a complicated point, I think, because companies, elder boards, they can be all very complicated, and people have their own agendas, and they may be withholding information from other people as well. I'm just trying to think through this one out loud. So
yeah, that's right. I think it requires a lot of self-awareness, mm-hmm. you know, and external awareness of what's happening with the people around me, looking for body language. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, if I sit on an elder board and I look around the room, or if I'm on a nonprofit board of directors and I look around the room, are people leaning forward with an open posture? Are they engaging and participating proactively in the conversation? Or do they sit back, cross their arms, and sort of passively participate? That would be an indicator that perhaps me as the leader of that group, or as one of the leaders or facilitators, that perhaps there are people that are less engaged than I like them to be, or that they could be. That would be one indicator. And then the other would just be, you know, there's moments when people share something that's perhaps a bit more personal or risky,
mm-hmm.
That requires some psychological safety to say out loud. And, or have they pursued us, you know, have they pulled us aside and said, "Hey, I'd like to share something with you," you know, or in a one-on-one interaction with them, are they saying, "See, by the way, you know, can I tell you about something that's going on in my life?" You know, I think those are all indicators that someone's leaning towards us rather than away from us.
Mm-hmm. So would that be a way that a person could act in order to have others open up to them?
I mean, that's a great point.
When you open up to somebody, then they open up to you. And that also takes a risk. I love that expression, psychological risk, because I think that sums it up well. Because how do we improve on becoming a person others want to open up to?
Yeah. I think, you know, so I recently wrote an article. You referenced mattnorman.com. I wrote an article on that site, mattnorman.com, around this question. And I indicated four things that we can do to cause people to lean towards us rather than away from us. And one of those factors is to cultivate a magnetic personality. And again, that doesn't mean that you're always gregarious, mm-hmm. you know, and the loudest person in the room. It's just that you're an attractive person. You're someone that people, and I don't mean physically, I mean personally attractive. And one of those factors is that I can manage my own anxiety, that I can manage and understand my own hot buttons or triggers, and that I'm predictable. That if I share something with you, for example, that you aren't going to fly off the handle, you're not going to judge me or shame me based on what I said, or that you aren't going to respond one way one time and another way a different time just based on the mood I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think a lot of it has to do with managing our own anxiety. And then also, as I alluded to, not being someone who's shaming or judgmental. And that would extend into criticism and complaining, that I'm not someone who has a negative spirit towards others. I don't mean constructive criticism. There's certainly a time to speak truth. At the same time, that we're someone who's not a negative spirit, that we're tending to look towards the positives in other people and in situations.
Yeah. Matt, how important is nonverbal communication, body language, eye contact, the kind of, you know, just things that go on in offices every day that would indicate to someone, ooh, I think this person would be happy to talk to me or happy to listen, because they're always so attentive and they're always so nice. So how important is that nonverbal language that goes on?
Yeah, I think it's so important. There's been so much research based on how quickly we make decisions about the trustworthiness of others based on the nonverbals. And you know, so much of that has to do with posture, with eye contact. And increasingly today, I think with technology, it's particularly important, because we may be in meetings where we hide behind devices.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You know?
And of course, that could occur even virtually, right? Where I was in a number of meetings today. One was on a Zoom meeting, and I was on a WebEx meeting earlier today. And in some cases, there were video cameras, so we could at least see some of the nonverbals, but in some of the cases there weren't. And, you know, if we hear typing going on in the background, or it's perceived that you're multitasking, you know, a lot of these factors can ultimately convey whether we're someone that is really, you know, that other people are drawn to us, or are they tolerating us, mm-hmm. as the case may be.
Yeah. Matt Norman is my guest. Go to mattnorman.com. He trains, he teaches, he coaches, he facilitates, he speaks, he does kind of everything. We're going to take a little break, and he will be back with us more in about 90 seconds. Welcome back to the show. I have Matt Norman on my guest line. Matt is aligned himself with Dale Carnegie and has done a tremendous job training and coaching and facilitating and speaking and does organizational alignment. You can learn more about Matt at mattnorman.com. We're talking about today, are you the kind of person other people want to work with? And we're trying to break this down a little bit and figure out what we can learn and what we can get better at. And so, Matt, just to bring listeners up to speed, if they just joined us, so far we're learning that it helps to be magnetic. It helps to be someone that people can trust and connect to, and that's all stuff we can work on, which is encouraging.
That's right. And frankly, Bill, I think you demonstrate so much of this. I think for people who have been listening to you and following your career, you know, you're both someone who listens and asks great questions. You know, you've also are, you know, fun and entertaining. People like to be around you, and then you also are able to connect with people on the harder side of life as you talk to people. You know, I know in your other podcast on, you know, addictions mm-hmm. and so forth that, mm-hmm. you know, you're creating psychological safety, which I think draws people into you. And that's really what we want to try to be, is someone that people see as safe. And that people see that if they're going to interact with us, they're not going to be met with criticism or judgment or, you know, emotional triggers as much as by affirmation and grace.
Mm-hmm. So, Matt, is there more to the, are you the kind of person that people are going to want to work with, or have we covered it?
So there's a few other points, you know, certainly one would be that we have a generous spirit, that we're we have an abundance mindset versus a scarcity mindset. You know, are we willing to give before expecting someone something in return? Mm-hmm. And another factor would be that we're clear in our messaging. Much of the neuroscience we spoke about earlier also indicates that, you know, human beings are wired to survive. And if we're confusing in our messaging, if we take too long to explain something, people will shut down. They'll turn off the podcast. They'll turn the station. Many of us, when we have a lot of subject matter expertise or we have a lot of detail behind our perspectives, we're tempted to just unload it on people, you know, kind of give them the full case before the jury. And it can often be hard to digest or overwhelming. That's another reason why people might lean away from us rather than towards us.
Yeah.
So those are a couple of factors.
Yeah, I love that. Would you follow up with some more on the abundance versus the scarcity mentality and how that would show up in our personality?
Yeah, you know, Adam Grant, is the professor at Wharton School of Business, is one of my favorite authors and a friend who wrote the book Give and Take. And in the book, he talks about research indicating that there are givers, takers, and matchers in the world. And givers are those people that tend to lead with generosity, give without necessarily expecting something in return. There are takers that are, you know, that are fundamentally oriented towards consumption and grabbing everything they can get. And then there are matchers, which is all quid pro quo, right? It's eye for an eye. If you'll give me this, I'll give you that. And the research indicates that Adam Grant did that the givers. Now, you have to be a strategic giver, he indicates in the book. You can't just always be giving without any boundaries or any thought as to your own self-care. But having said that, those that are more oriented towards generosity are more successful in any area, in any type of organization.
Mm-hmm. That's real interesting. I know we all want to be a person on the job or on the elder board or on a committee that people like to be around. This has been very helpful. I would love for you to talk with our time remaining about getting what you want in life by figuring out a way to reduce some of your stress and anxiety. Now, you've shared in the past some of your social anxieties and stuff, which is a great story, by the way. And
thank you.
You've gone from someone who is nearly paralyzed with anxiety and fear to being, doing what you're doing for a living right now. So it's fantastic. But we all want, obviously, happiness, health. We want work success. We want our families to be well. I mean, we want to serve the Lord well, and we want to do all of this, but we've got certain stress and anxieties that we deal with as well. Can you talk to that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. It's, what I've learned, and you talked about my journey dealing with anxiety, something I am wired in many ways to battle. It's the a thorn in my side is often catastrophic what if thinking and wondering if I'm enough, if I'm measuring up. And so much of that is self-focused. And I think as we get outside of ourselves and really focus on others, I've found that my anxiety is lowered. I remember my first Dale Carnegie course that was recommended to me to take because of my social anxiety and just discomfort in meetings. Again, this is something that people would have been unsuspecting of at the time. I was able to fake it, but inside I was just uncomfortable in meetings and conference rooms and so forth. So someone recommended I take a Dale Carnegie course. And I remember being in the parking lot after the course of one of the early sessions and describing this anxiety to the instructor of the course. And he looked at me, he said, "Matt, it's not about you." And I said, "Well, I understand, you know, yeah, my values are certainly others oriented." He said, "No, Matt, it's not about you." And it was like that moment in Good Will Hunting, yeah. You know, where Robin Williams looks at Matt Damon and just keeps repeating the same phrase until I think I finally broke down and was emotional in that moment, just realizing that so much of my thinking was self-focused. You know, am I enough? What if things don't work out for me? And so really, I think this is a key ingredient in following Jesus I think Jesus models this. I think in many ways, why he's such a magnetic personality, why people gravitate towards Jesus is because he is not anxious. He is so others oriented. He has an abundance mindset. He meets us with love rather than judgment. And so this is really about following Jesus and therefore it's about having life and having it abundantly.
Mm-hmm. C.S. Lewis said that you find happiness in your peripheral vision. So when you're serving someone, you kind of pause and look to both sides and go, "Wow, I'm really happy right now."
Yeah.
But when you're trying to make yourself happy, you're never going to find happiness because you're too self-focused. So your point is beautifully expressed and well taken. It's a fantastic message for all of our listeners, including this one particular radio host.
Thank you for saying that, Bill.
Yeah, yeah. Matt, I appreciate you coming on the show. And I just also want to let our listeners know that if you want to read more about Matt's, go read Matt's blog and hear about his resources, go to mattnorman.com. You can see his smiling face. It's a handsome one. So, Matt, thanks again for doing the show.
Thankful for you, Bill. Always a pleasure.
Yep. We'll take a short break and we will be back with lots more in just a minute.
One, 2, 3, 4.
Welcome back to the show. Sheila Heen is my guest today. She is the founder of Triad Consulting Group and a lecturer on law at Harvard Law School. I guess that's pretty cool. She has spent the last 20 years with the Harvard Negotiation Project, and we're going to talk today about difficult conversations. We all have them. We all need to have them. We're all going to have them. Sheila, welcome back to the show.
Well, I am delighted to be here. Thank you.
That pretty much translates into you're doing this for free.
Yeah. So far, this isn't such a hard conversation.
It's not so far. But I do want to talk about difficult conversations because you're the expert and we all have them and we're all going to have them. And it's smart if we have a framework for understanding how to go about them.
Yeah. So One of the things that has been interesting for us to learn over the years is the extent to which all difficult conversations really have the same underlying structure in terms of what we're all thinking and feeling in the midst of them, which is kind of interesting, right? Because we have them in all different directions in our lives, with our family members and at work and with our neighbors and with our accountant or whatever, right? With your dog.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting that you're actually preoccupied with the same things in all those different contexts.
Sheila, can I interrupt for a minute?
Yeah.
Isn't it based on anyone's basic threshold for what they consider difficult or hard to talk about?
It is. So what we tend to say is that if a conversation feels difficult to you, if you're, it's keeping you up at night, or you've tried having it and it never seems to work, like, or go where you need it to go, that qualifies.
Okay. See, when I have a difficult conversation, I'm only willing to have it when I know I'm going to get the outcome I want.
Right. And if you're like most people, you're probably not going to attempt to have it unless you're pretty sure that you're right.
Okay. Yeah.
Right?
You go in there with your case pretty well prepared, and you think that this is going to come out good, and it usually doesn't.
It usually doesn't. And by the way, there's also a whole other category, which is I didn't want to have this conversation, but I got ambushed by this conversation.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Those are in this bucket also.
You leave me out of this one.
Yeah, exactly. Like a conversation just walked in my door that I was not even expecting today. So in terms of what we're preoccupied with, there are sort of three categories of things that we're thinking and feeling in the midst of these messy situations. And if you can understand that underlying structure, it just gives you some landmarks to navigate. So the first category is what we call the what happened part of the conversation. So I have a theory about what has happened and what is happening right now and what should happen in the future. And that theory, that story that I have, has three pieces, key pieces to it. The first is, what am I right about? And that's a very long list, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
always. Uh-huh. Whether or not I'm ambushed. The second is, whose fault is it that we're in the middle of this mess and that we're having this difficult conversation? And that's often you. That's your fault. But meaning the other person's. But sometimes it's actually I'm mad at myself, and that doesn't necessarily make it easier, right? And then the third key part of the story is, why are they acting this way? You know, they just have to have their way. They're controlling. They're selfish. They don't get it. They're naive. I have to have some explanation for why the other person is being so unreasonable or doesn't already agree with me. So that story that we tell, which we call the what happened conversation, those are three key pieces. And by the way, if we're in the midst of a conversation with each other, you're also thinking about what you're right about and whose fault it is,
mm-hmm.
and why I'm being so difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so that's one bucket of things. There are two more things going on that we often don't think about, which is the second one is feelings. Like, what do I do with all of the strong and often conflicted feelings that I feel? I'm frustrated. I'm confused. I feel taken advantage of. I feel guilty. I'm lonely. I'm sad that it's come to this. I feel anxious about the future. Like, I often have a really confusing bundle of conversation or feelings going on in the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to figure out what to do with them, particularly in a professional context where I'm not really supposed to be having feelings.
Yeah.
Right? And then the last is what we call the identity conversation, because if a conversation feels difficult to you, chances are there's something it suggests about you that feels like it's at stake. Like, am I not being a team player? Am I not a good parent? Am I not as valued as I thought I was? Am I competent? Am I a good person? And those can feel like they're on the table and at stake, which is part of what drives the anxiety about the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting because in any difficult conversation in your life, if you reflect on what's going on for each person internally, those kinds of things show up. People are preoccupied with those three categories of things, whether we're aware of it or not. So there's the framework, but then the question becomes, so what?
Yeah.
Right? Why does that help me? And the reason it helps us is that there really isn't a good way for me to have a productive conversation if I'm still preoccupied with what I'm right about and why this is your fault,
mm-hmm.
Et cetera. So actually, the reason it's helpful is that once I understand that, the first conversation I need to have is really a conversation with myself. Like, can I shift what I'm preoccupied with from what I'm right about to getting curious about why we see this so differently? Like, it's so obvious that I'm right. Why wouldn't you agree with me? Like, what is it? What's going on?
Yeah.
But if I actually can genuinely get curious, like, so why would you think that that's a good idea? Because it seems so obvious to me that it's not a good idea, or it isn't fair
mm-hmm.
if we do it that way, or it's not going to work. And if I can shift from blame to, the first shift is sort of from certainty about what I'm right about to curiosity. The second shift inside that story would be from blame to what we call joint contribution. So what did we each contribute to this? It's not necessarily things that we did wrong, but it might be things that didn't help and that got us to where we're at, because that tells us what would we have to change to handle this differently in the future. And then the third is to let go of being sure I know why you're being so idiotic
yeah.
and misguided, to just speak to the impact that your behavior is having and leave the question of your intentions. I don't know what your intentions were, but, you know, one of the impacts of the conversation that we had last week in front of the client was that I think that they are wondering whether, you know, they should go with us
mm-hmm.
or whether we have a clear vision for what we're proposing to them. So we talk about the impact rather than talk about intentions. Like, that's different than, I don't know why you insist on undermining me in front of the client all the time. That is less likely to produce a good conversation.
Yeah, I would imagine so. It's probably important
exactly.
to remember that you think you might know how someone feels or what they're trying to say, but there's a good chance you don't.
Yeah, or why they're being the way they're being. So we infer people's intentions from the impact that they have on us. Like, if I felt undermined last week,
mm-hmm.
then I figured, well, you just wanted to be controlling.
Yeah, is it
right?
Because our brains can't help it, Sheila, and they start filling in details, whether
yeah,
their details
that
are true or not?
That is a big part of it. I think that is a big part of it. And plus, we walk through the world wanting to know why people are acting the way that they're acting, because it helps us know how to navigate them,
mm-hmm.
right? So we're really incented to have a story pretty quickly about people. Like, if you don't say hi to me in the hall, I think to myself, you know, well, were you just preoccupied, or do you hate me now? Or were you being stuck up, or you were being aloof or something
yeah.
like that? And I think we're kind of wired that way, and we don't even notice that we jump to conclusions about people's intentions and feelings.
Yeah. I mean, what about if at work, instead of people saying to you, hi, Sheila, after 6 months of working there, they go, hey, you, how you doing?
Right.
And you go, I still don't think they know my name.
Right. And you think to yourself, am I not important enough to them? Am I not, they clearly don't value me.
Mm-hmm.
They hardly even see me. They've been actively ignoring me. And I'm starting to not just tell a story about what does this suggest about me, which actually we should start to wonder, right? But now
yes.
we're also like, why am I invisible to people around here? Is this feedback?
Hmm. Yeah, right.
But we're also now starting to tell a story about them, right? They think that they're so high and mighty and, you know, don't care about other people and don't value the work that I do.
We're so messed up.
Well, and the problem is that we get ourselves, like, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy,
mm-hmm.
right? And so we try to have a conversation with them to explain why the fact that they don't value our work is a problem for us. But they're like, what? What do you mean I don't value your work? Right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're each speaking from inside our own story about what we're right about, and we're just talking past each other.
Yeah. Boy, that is right spot on. So we do not take the time, or we don't fully understand another person's perspective or their side of the story. What are we doing wrong when it comes to difficult conversations?
Yeah, well, you know, I think that one of the things that is easy to assume is that my job in the conversation, like what I'm trying to achieve, is I'm trying to explain to you why I'm right.
Mm-hmm.
And so my purpose is to get you to see that I'm right and to agree with me.
Right.
And first of all, whether or not that will ever happen, which is maybe unlikely, our first thing is to really shift to have a different purpose. Like, at least in this conversation, let's figure out why we see it so differently.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
You know, I feel like, you know, I was surprised that you didn't invite us to the holidays, and hurt by that. And I'm just
curious. You always bring that cake that nobody wants to eat. So we just stopped inviting you.
I thought you liked that cake.
No, nobody likes that cake. And we don't.
I hate that cake. I was only making it because I thought that you were expecting me to bring it.
Yeah, see, we're all misunderstanding each other now.
We're all misunderstanding each other. And so, I mean, you know, we're joking around, but I think sometimes we actually discover, oh, actually, I was misunderstanding, or I thought I was being helpful, but clearly I hurt your feelings or whatever. And we sort some things out pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to also be careful that we're not saying everything's a misunderstanding and everybody has good intentions and, you know, there is no right and wrong. There are definitely versions and understandings that are more and less reasonable. But a first step is, like, help me understand why you see it the way that you see it, or what mm-hmm. you're looking at, what you're reacting to, and what I'm doing that maybe is contributing to the problem that I'm not even aware I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can have that conversation first, that's our – we actually learn something, and we have a better sense of what the problem is that maybe needs to be solved between us.
Yeah. Now, Sheila, I really appreciate the framework you've given us for difficult conversations. Now I would like to shift the focus to a little bit of the profile of the person who succeeds well with difficult conversations, because you're so calm and you're so well measured with what you say. What if I've just got a very short attention span, I'm a little hot-headed, and you put those two together? That's not a good recipe for dealing with difficult conversations very well.
Well, you're right, it's not, and that's part of the challenge of difficult conversations, which goes to that feelings and identity piece,
mm-hmm.
because even the most unflappable among us can get flapped.
Oh, yeah.
Have you noticed that?
Oh, yeah, I've been flapped many
times. With the right person,
yes.
With the right person and the right topic on the table,
yes.
That calm starts to get disrupted. And so part of getting skillful about difficult conversations is recognizing more quickly, like, oh, I'm hooked. Like, I can feel it. Like, I can feel my heart starting to race. I can feel I'm flushing. I cannot believe that they just said that.
Mm-hmm.
And choosing my purpose for how I want to respond rather than just reacting.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking, okay, what is important to me here and what am I trying to achieve with how I want to respond? Which is not, by the way, to say that I'm always in great shape to have the conversation.
Right.
I think there are times where I'm much better off. We're both better off. If I say, okay, you know what? I think I need to take a walk. I want to think about what just happened and I want to sit down and talk about it tomorrow or whatever. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because part of the skill to develop is in thinking about when not to have the conversation and just being a little more self-aware of really have the capacity to have it.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Sheila,
yeah.
Let me take a break. Sheila Heen is my guest, and why not? We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. I've got Sheila Heen on our studio line. She's the founder of Triad Consulting Group, lecturer on law at Harvard Law School, and has spent the last 20 years with the Harvard Negotiation Project. We're talking about difficult conversations, and she's the expert and my go-to person when it comes to figuring out how best to do this, because I think it's something we all struggle with. And anytime we're in a difficult conversation, what's immediately at danger is our self-image and our emotions. And we take everything so personally. We respond to just about, we interpret everything that we get about us, don't we, Sheila?
Oh, we do, really quickly, really quickly. And we worry, like, am I being an interesting enough guest? am I giving understandable answers? Am I making any sense?
Yes,
like,
yes, yes.
That whole conversation
Three
is
yeses.
Happening in my head
I
as
get it.
We talk.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
And you're, you know, a Harvard person, and I'm just a radio guy, so I'm going, am I asking interesting enough questions to keep you interested?
Right. And so this is the challenge between us, which is that we're having a conversation with each other, but we're having a conversation with your audience about something that we all are challenged by and we're all trying to understand and navigate
mm-hmm.
in our lives, right? And for me, part of what helps me in the midst of it is just trying to remember that from an identity point of view, I am still a child of God. And the extent that I'm wondering, am I a good person or am I worthy? The answer is, well, yes and no. I'm at least loved,
mm-hmm.
right? Whether or not I was worthy of that. And by the way, remembering that so is the other person that I'm having a hard time with. For all of their brokenness or all of their challenging personality or ways in which they don't get it, they're still also loved.
Mm-hmm.
And so that may or may not mean I need to be in relationship with them. And we may or may not be able to work through this, but it's just a basic groundedness in that helps for me.
Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking of a Sheryl Crow song that says, the first cut is the deepest. So sometimes when I start a conversation and it's on the difficult side, I always say you don't really write anything, you just rewrite stuff. Because, you know, you might write something and then you have to rewrite it, right? And sometimes I say stuff, but I always have to re-say it or continue it, part two of a conversation you start. But however you begin could be where the thing either is destined for success or failure, because that first cut, the first thing you say in a difficult conversation, is that important or am I just making this up in my head?
Oh, that is so important. In fact, there are two things you're saying that are really important. One is that most difficult conversations are not one-shot deals, right? They're conversations we're going to have over time.
Yes.
But the second is that how we start each episode of those conversations over time really matters. So there's a ton of research about this, that the first 3 minutes or so has a high predictability for how the conversation will end. And so part of the trick of how to start a conversation is not to start it only inside your own story.
Say more about that, Sheila, because I find that fascinating, but I don't know what you mean.
So if we're colleagues and I am really annoyed by what you did last week.
I don't know why.
One way for me to start the conversation.
I was right.
What do you mean you don't know why?
Well,
okay,
I
Bill,
was right.
So we need to sit down and talk about why, once again,
Here we go.
You insisted on taking credit for the project and, in addition to that, dominated the conversation.
Okay.
And, you know, we've talked about this before, and I don't know why you don't get it. So let's just pause. How's this going for you?
Not good at all. This is not working at all. Matter of fact, I might cut this interview off right here. I'm so offended.
Right, exactly. You're about to hang up on me? So the mistake I'm making is that I am starting this conversation totally inside my own story.
Okay.
You know, I'm right that you're the one who acted badly. I know what kind of person you are, et cetera. You're to blame for this whole situation.
Mm-hmm.
And so in my story, I'm the victim as well as the hero, by the way, and you are the villain.
Okay.
And that's just not a conversation you really want to be in.
That's going to go nowhere.
Yeah, no, thank you. No, thank you. So if I want to start the conversation differently, one way I could do it is, of course, to be in your story, but that's not a place any of us want to be. So so instead, I can start it from what we call the third story to say, so Bill, I want to sit down. I'd love to talk about this because last week something happened that has happened a whole bunch of times before, and I'm just trying to figure out what's going on. So when we were in the meeting last week with the client and with our boss, a couple things happened that have happened before. So one was that I felt like the airtime between us was not even, and also we had agreed ahead of time what we would each cover, and then you jumped in to cover a couple things that I thought I was prepared to step in and cover. And the second was, I think they were left with the impression, whether it was intentional or not, I don't know. I'm guessing it probably wasn't. But I think that because of the way you closed, you left with the impression that sort of you were the driving force, which was surprising to me and a little upsetting to me. And I'm wondering what's going on between us that we keep landing in that place that isn't really working for me. But I'm curious, what was, looking back on that meeting, talk to me about what was going on from your point of view.
Okay, I'm not in the least bit mad right now or threatened by what you just said.
Well, that's because you're a better person than the Bill that I was talking to. But yes.
No, but I mean, you handled that so well. So I'm thinking I might be saying something like, well, I got kind of on a roll in that meeting and they were buying sort of what I was saying and I wanted to keep the momentum going. And sorry if I stepped on your toes, I didn't mean to. You know, maybe next time I'll just try to be more aware of our contributions in the meeting.
Yeah, so it sounds like also you were worried that we would lose momentum if you handed it off.
I was afraid
of
that.
So now we're starting to sort of talk about what happened that I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt that it wasn't intentional, but I'm also not saying it's not a problem.
Uh-huh.
And so what I'm doing with that opening is basically saying, I want to talk about what went wrong. I want to understand your perspective, and I want to share what the problem is from my point of view. So now both of our stories have a legitimate place in that conversation.
Okay.
And nobody's the villain, necessarily.
Yeah.
Instead, we're partners to try to figure it out together, and that's an invitation that you're much more likely to take.
Okay. Now, Sheila, how often do people adapt this style? Every time I hear of stories, there's always a villain. There's always someone that was like, oh, this guy really messed up.
Yeah, well, so you're right. I do think that our stories naturally have heroes, villains, and victims.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the easiest template in our heads to tell the story. And this actually requires us to shift to say, in some ways, we're both victims, and in some ways, we have the potential to both be heroes here, if I can invite you as my partner to try to figure out what's going on. And at the end of the day, I may make my own decisions about whether to stay in this story with you. But we're really offering the other person a different role.
Mm-hmm.
And if you listen to some of the best negotiators out there, if you pick someone in your life who you really admire and pay attention, this is one of the things that you'll notice that they're doing. And they're often doing it instinctively. Which is that they're offering the other person a role that the other person likes and that is not dishonest. It's not like, let's pretend that you're something other than you are.
Mm-hmm. Sheila, it's really easy to accuse someone, isn't it?
And it's so satisfying.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
it's satisfying until they respond.
Right.
Right? Because they're going to fight back and say, no, I'm not the problem here. You're the one who's the problem. You're oversensitive and, you know, you don't really get the client anyway. So I couldn't let you take the ship down, right? So if I keep you as the villain, you're going to fight back with your story. And in your story, I'm the one who's the problem or the villain or clueless.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why actually things escalate between us, because it's a fight of my story versus your story and whose story is right.
Yeah. Well, I want to invite you back to the Christmas gathering. Just don't bring the cake. And so we've done good with each other today. And then also, just to let our listeners know, go to stoneandheen.com. Is that still the best place to go buy books that you've written?
I think it is. It is. And you can find them at any bookseller, Amazon.
Yeah, Amazon.
Your local bookstore.
Yes.
Et cetera.
And
you
spell your last name, H-E-E-N, Sheila Heen, just to let people know, even though I know. So just so you know that I know.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for doing the show. Always nice to talk to you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and
absolutely.
This is...
It's great to talk to you.
Thanks.
And,
was this
know,
a difficult conversation?
It was a really fun conversation,
no, was
as it always
was
is.
Was it difficult?
It wasn't difficult.
Oh, good.
You asked great questions.
Oh, thanks. All right, that wraps up our show for the day and our shows for the week. Thank you for listening, and thank you for supporting Faith Radio. I always love spending time with you. I can hardly wait. I'm already excited for Monday. But in the meantime, have a great weekend. And as you lay your head on the pillow tonight, just remember that God is writing his great, grand story in your life. Have a great weekend. God bless. I'll see you Monday. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.